Star Walker Studios presents Game Master's Journey, your multidimensional RPG podcast. John Marvin of Dread Unicorn Games joins me on the show today to discuss the art of game mastering. We discuss his new adventure for Numenera, what he's learned about running adventures from 13th Age Organized Play, and how to use montages and fronts to enhance your game. So join me on the journey. Together, we can become game masters, truly worthy of the title. Hello, listener. Greetings, fellow GM and or player. Welcome to episode 66 of Game Master's Journey, your multidimensional RPG podcast. I'm your host, Lex Starwalker, and I'm transmitting to you today from the Obsidian Monolith somewhere outside time and space. John Marvin has recently released a new adventure for Numenera called Some Below Sleeping Lady, and this is the second in a trilogy of adventures for Numenera. So I'm going to get John on the comm here in a minute to talk about his adventure and just game mastering in general. And a couple other things we're going to be discussing under the game mastering umbrella is how you can use fronts and montages in your game to enhance the experience for everyone at the table. But before I get John on, I want to send a shout out and a thank you to my newest patron, Steve Ella. And I hope I said your last name right, Steve. But I want to thank Steve so much for becoming a patron. I really appreciate it. I could not do this show without the patrons and their support. You guys are the best of the best, and I really appreciate it. Also, I want to send out a shout out and thank you to Anduriel from Australia, who recently gave the show a 5-star review on iTunes. And Anduriel says, A++++++. Great podcast for DMs and players. So thank you, Anduriel, for your review. I really appreciate it. Now, this interview with John will be in two parts. So you can find part two of the interview in the following episode of Game Master's Journey, episode 67. So without further ado, I'm going to warm up the communications array and let's go talk to John Marvin of Dread Unicorn Games. John Marvin is joining me on the show today, and if you've been with me since the GM Intrusion days, you'll recognize John. He was on GM Intrusions once, and welcome back to the show, John.
Yeah, different show. Thank you.
Sort of wow, the same show.
It's the same
but different. Yeah.
That's the important thing. Thank you so much. It's great. I love your show.
Well, thanks. So I'm really happy to have you on because you're a big 13th Age fan, and it's always great to have someone on that knows more about 13th Age. And you also have published now two products for Numenera, like officially right. licensed products.
Yes, indeed.
So lots of interesting stuff we can talk about today.
Yeah, I just got the print version of Sleeping Lady out. So that's kind of... electronic is great, and it doesn't eat up space when you run out of space, but there's something about holding the book, you know?
Is the print version color?
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
Nothing but the best for...
Nice.
Here it is. Podcast folks, I'm showing them this on video.
Yeah, I can see it on the Hangout.
But yes, it is.
Yeah. Awesome. Very nice.
Yes. And I also have a... besides PDF, I did an ebook for iPads.
Oh, cool.
I often bring my iPad to the game table now.
Yeah.
And I find that works even better than a PDF on an iPad.
Awesome. Well, since we're already talking about it, let's talk about Sleeping Lady and your whole Sun Below series of adventures now.
Right. And I've got a license to do a third, so it'll be a trilogy.
Nice.
So the idea of the sun below is under the way under the surface of the ninth world is another sun and another world, and hence the sun below. And so I've come up with two adventures set in that setting, and I will be coming up with a third after I finish my first 13th age product. And this product, Sleeping Lady, takes place in a mining town, but okay. They're not mining ore, they're mining Numenera.
Ooh, that sounds cool.
And so when the players get there, the mining town is having all sorts of problems, and what they find out is all the machines, and there's a lot of automatons in this town, are turning hostile.
Ooh.
Attacking people and trying to run off the mountain that the mining town is on.
Nice.
So, and the mining town is, of course, populated predominantly by blood-sucking slime creatures.
I love it.
Which are a return of the Slythic if you played the first adventure. This can be used as a sequel to City on the Edge, or you can run them in reverse order or just independently.
That's awesome. And I don't want to embarrass you, John, but I think you've made a lot of really smart decisions, I think.
That is embarrassing.
In these adventures. And I got a whole list of them here. But first off, I think it's awesome how you've kind of created your own part of the ninth world, that the way you've done it, it's completely separate. So it doesn't like break your suspension of disbelief that it's never mentioned in any of the official Numenera products, but it's not like a whole nother planet or something.
Right. Well, that was my intention. And you could use it anywhere in a Numenera campaign, because as long as you could obviously justify some magical or ninth world elevator,
yeah,
or hole in the ground or teleporter. So it's really easy to get in. Interestingly enough, I just had two requests to make a version of the Sun Below for the Strange.
Oh.
In the same week, because it's tied to the ninth world, but I could actually pull that stuff out.
Yeah, you could make it like its own recursion or something.
That's
right?
What people have been saying.
Yeah, that wouldn't be too hard to do.
I know, two requests to do that in like a week, so.
Wow, maybe you could take a page from Monty Cook Games book and just do like a little conversion.
I was thinking of that too, yeah.
That'd be cool. Either way, it'd be cool.
Strange GMs might think it's a no-brainer to just take it and do it themselves, so I'm not sure what the demand is, but it's a cool idea.
Yeah. So let's see here. Some other things that you do that I think is really cool is, well, first of all, you already mentioned that you can either use the second adventure as a sequel to the first, or you can just play the second, which I think is really cool too. Like, you're not locked in. You can do whatever you want.
Right. They're related, and they have some NPCs that are the same in both, but if the players have, say, killed off one of the NPCs, I have sidebars that tell you what to do. You know, how do you reskin? So, you know, if the players killed Morklish in the first adventure, well, his evil twin Mokrish is now in the second adventure.
Nice.
And the adventures can be done in either order. So what's first and second is up to you and your players. Just like the first one, it works for any tier. Which also, like, compare that to like a standard, like an old style D&D campaign.
Right.
Well, this is for third level and this is for fifth level.
Right.
It's hard to swap those.
Yeah.
But Numenera actually makes it easy to scale. So
yeah,
you can put them in any order you want.
Yeah, that's really cool, because you have, like, anytime you have any kind of an encounter or whatever, you'll have a little box that says, you know, this is how it is for, what is it, tiers 1 and 2, and then 3 and 4 and 5 and 6. You have three different kind of little stat blocks or whatever.
And I have like little extra rules for tier 1, just because, you know, especially a tier 1 nano can evaporate sometimes if you're not careful. You did something that really, you know, some detonator or something that really woke up the party. And boy, the glaive is mad and the jack is really hurt. And oh, the nano's dead. So try to avoid that.
Yeah, you definitely, I don't know, it might be possible to do that with like D&D, but it'd be really rough to make an adventure and say, here's how you do it for levels
for
1 to 20.
Levels.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I think it's something the Cypher system lets you do a lot easier. I've been actually thinking about how I would do that for D&D.
Yeah,
and I don't think I can. There's always scaling advice, or not always, but in a lot of good adventures, they'll have scaling advice, and that's plus or minus like one or two levels.
Right. Yeah.
Not plus 12 levels.
Yeah, I mean, your adventure, to kind of put it in D&D equivalent terms, you could play that at first level or 20th level. It doesn't matter.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah, that's really cool. I'm honestly surprised that the folks at Monty Cook Games haven't stolen that from you yet, and that they're not doing that in their adventures. Or maybe they are, but...
Well, I haven't seen it yet, but they do have advice in the beginning of their adventures, or many of their adventures, on how to scale, but it requires you to remember that and in your mind, or write down in your book, right, or whatever, that... Because, when you're on page 32, you might have forgotten that advice from page 2.
Right. Yeah, where you have it all right there in line.
Right. that's what I want, yeah. Because I don't want you to be page flipping all the time.
Yeah, that's awesome. Another thing I like is you've got the nice colored boxes with information for the players, which it still shocks me when I see an adventure that doesn't have that at all.
Right. And you don't have to read it using my words. You can put them in your own words. It's just information that should be conveyed.
Right.
Some people really don't want to read my words, which, right, I think you should, because they're mine, but but I wouldn't read anybody else's. Yeah. But yeah, you can always put them in your own words, but that's the important stuff, that as soon as you open the door, as soon as you fall through the chute, as soon as you teleport, this is what the players need to know fast.
Yeah. Yeah, I hate it. I was running a D&D campaign not too long ago, Tyranny of Dragons, and a lot of times, sometimes they had that, and then sometimes they didn't. And so I'd be trying to describe to the players, and I'd accidentally tell them something I wasn't supposed to tell them, because I'm just kind of going through the DM information.
Yes, I have done the same, which is part of, that's why that stuff is there.
And you keep them fairly short too, because I hate it when those are like super long and then it's hard to paraphrase it.
Yeah, one of the things in both of my adventures that I think is important for I like to write the games I would like to play, right?
Sure.
And so I don't want to just follow a dungeon crawl necessarily. I want lots of player decisions that make a difference. And I also want to improv when things are slow, how to pick it up, when the players get lost. So... All my scenes, I have suggested follow-up scenes.
Oh, cool.
Where do you go from here? And then I have a whole bunch of optional scenes that the ref can just put in anywhere. They haven't heard from the sleeping lady, who's kind of, she's in the title. She must be important. have a scene with her. She's so powerful. You can even put her instead of a group teleport, which during a playtest I did. They were going from A to B, and they didn't get to B. They got to C, and then had a whole scene, and then boop, ended up at B.
That's awesome. Yeah, I really love it when adventurers kind of have advice for the GM. Here's some tips on how to actually do this and make it work.
Right, yeah. I want it to be more of a... It's not a total sandbox, because there is a story, and it's more of a... I like to put the ability to improv into the game, and because nobody knows your players better than you if you're the GM.
Right.
You don't know them, you should learn them.
Yeah, right. Get on that.
Really. And I mean, the big thing in most role-playing games is some people like to solve problems by thinking about them and negotiating, and violence is a last resort. Uh-huh. And other people... There's a resort besides violence? What does that mean? and I try to, and those are the two extremes, but most groups I think are in the middle. And so the adventure, I try to let all those three groups have a good time.
Awesome.
There's plenty of combat, but there's plenty of ways to avoid some of it, not all of it.
Yeah, I've learned, I don't play nearly as much as I GM, but I've learned when I play, I tend to be a bit of a murder hobo. Which is funny.
Like my friend Dwayne recently ran Shadow of the Demon Lord one shot for me. Right. And I was going for, in that game, you have like corruption, which is like how much you've been tainted by evil.
Yeah.
And I was going for, let's see how much corruption I can get in one session.
Yeah, that whole mechanic reminds me of Ravenloft.
Yeah, you're right. I didn't think of that, but yeah, it totally does. You've attracted the notice of the dark powers.
Certainly have. And they're not going away.
Another thing I really like about your adventures is they're very, I mean, if I didn't know differently looking at one of your adventures, I could think it was like an official product. Like you'd lay them out the same way, right down to like the call outs in the margin. It'll tell you what page in the core book you need to look something up in or somewhere else in the adventure. GM intrusions all over right. The place. Which is awesome.
Yeah, oh, I love adding GM intrusions. Yeah, you need at least 50 GM intrusions or it's not a good adventure. But thank you. I do spend a lot of time on layout. I'm becoming not an expert, but I've passed the beginner stage with Adobe InDesign, which is what all the big boys use.
Yeah.
And that actually, as I get better at it, that makes the next game and the next game that much easier. Because
yeah.
I'm no longer learning from scratch as I was at the beginning.
Yeah.
Also, creating that ebook,
that's
a menu item. That was so easy. Nice. I was like really worried about it, and I read up on all the things that could go wrong, and I was ready to fix all the problems, and the first time it just worked.
Nice.
It's like, oh, wow. Thank you, Adobe.
Well, I know when I had you on GM Intrusions and we were talking about the first adventure, I think, I don't remember if it made it to the show or not, but we talked quite a bit about, you know, your fun that you had learning to do the layout. And
yeah,
but I think it's really awesome that you go to that effort, because I think that's one thing that's just amazing about the Numenera books and the Strange books are the same way, is the way they're laid out and the way Monty Cook kind of looked at travel guides and
right.
kind of did it like that. And I think it's awesome that you do that, because it makes it a lot easier to run.
It's part of, I'm trying to create what I would want to buy.
Right.
And I love that too about the Monte Cook products. So I, you know, I want to keep up that standard, and I do a few things differently, but obviously they're all better. and you know, I certainly, it's so much easier to have a great model
yeah.
to look at. And you know, I didn't come up with it on the fly, just like Monty took travel books,
right.
The Dorling Kindersley travel books, and applied it to gaming. I'm taking what they do and using it.
Yeah. Yeah. If I was going to design my own role-playing game, which I'm not going to, but if I was...
What about next year?
I would take the Numenera core book, and that would be kind of my standard. Like I would say, right. I want to do what this did, because I still, it's been what, 2 or 3 years since that came out, and I still think it's the best RPG book I've ever owned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's amazing. I really also, like we were talking about before, how easy it is to modify things. Like I've added things like MOOCs,
yes.
but I don't feel that I've really complicated things, because we started with such a simple base.
Right.
Adding MOOC rules was like trivial.
Yeah.
And doing things like that were also I wanted to have some artifacts that had powers that work sometimes and not others.
Right. Yeah.
And so I based it on your die roll. So if you roll a 17 or better in combat, gee, you're already looking for a 17 or better in combat. Then so that complicates things, I guess, a little bit. But the player's handling that, and they want that 17 or better anyway, so they're yeah. looking for it.
Yeah, and you like artifacts that have weird little quirks to them, too.
Oh, quirks! Yeah, that is one thing I really wish... he put quirks in the rules, but you never see it anywhere
yeah.
else.
Yeah.
And so I'm all about the quirks.
Yeah.
And obviously the designers, we were talking earlier about 13th Age, they're all about the quirks as well. So they're kindred quirk spirits.
That's awesome.
If you look at any 13th Age magic item, they all have quirks.
Oh,
and
nice.
As soon as you have more magic items than you have levels, your quirks take you over.
Oh. And I'm going to have to look at that.
Which is a really cool idea. Sir, you could have as many as you want, but you're going to be a walking cork bag.
I think one day I'm going to be running some bastard combination of D&D and 13th Age, because there are just so many great ideas in 13th Age to steal.
yeah. It's a great...
Or vice versa.
Exactly. I'm really learning a lot by GMing the organized play for 13th Age. Because the authors add more cool stuff all the time.
Cool.
And I go, oh, I can steal that. I can steal that. it's that they modify the world that you present to your players based not on your icon relationship roles, but on the choices that your players have already made. So if they're really into the Archmage, they're going to find the hand of the Archmage in everything they see. You're actually going to describe it different. The monsters will look different. As opposed to if they're really into the Emperor, they find some bandits. Oh, they're deserters from the Imperial forces. You know their tactics. You've got an advantage. You know how they're going to fight. Some real interesting concepts come out from running their organized play. You know, Monty Cook's going to start organized play.
Really? For Cypher System? Nice. Yeah.
I know. So I'm excited about that. I really think that you can learn a lot from the designers about what they think their game should be like.
Yeah.
By doing stuff like that. And my players in the organized play for 13th Age are having a great time, the ones that don't die. And they have a good time, too.
That's awesome. Yeah, I haven't had any experience with 13th Age organized play. I've looked at some of the adventures, though, and I'm really impressed with their adventures and kind of how they structure them.
Well, that's where I stole the montage. I mean, borrowed. I was inspired to steal the montage. I guess I stole it. That's where I got the montage from.
Okay.
That I put in both of my adventures. I always have a montage scene. Those are in every single 13th Age organized play adventure. And you always have a montage.
Can you tell us about that? Like, I know what a montage is in a movie, but in I'm not movie. Sure I know what All it right. is in an RPG.
So a montage in an RPG is a chance for you to cover a lot of ground without a lot of die rolling, without any die rolling, actually. And it shows the players how glorious the world is and allows them to engage in shared world building. And what you do, so it's knocking a camera over, is you pick a player to start with, and usually the best player at improv is a good choice.
Okay.
And you say, okay, you're going on a journey. The adventure is far away from where you're starting from. And in order to get to that castle or that Numenera mine or that space station, or you can do this in any game system, you all have overcome intense problems, but you're so cool, you did it. So come up, you sitting right there, Xiao, let's say her name is Xiao. She's sitting right there. Xiao, give us the first problem that the group overcame, and then George, who's sitting next to Xiao, he's going to tell us how he solved it. So Xiao goes, gee, okay, we were flying in an airship and it was swallowed by a floating balloon whale. And I go, okay, George, how'd you get out of the floating, you save everybody and get your airship out of the floating balloon whale? And George comes up with something, and he'll go, well, I think what I did is I started a fire inside and it coughed us out. And so I'll describe that back, and I'll make sure George's character is the hero of it. Oh, George, your character, nobody else could have done this. And the balloon whale coughs you out, and maybe you might want to give them a little advantage. Maybe they find a cipher on the way out if they were low on ciphers or whatever, if you're playing a cipher system game. And then now George will come up with the next problem. And then Sally, next to George, will solve that. And then, you know, Rupert and so on. And you go around the table till everybody's come up with some problem. Everyone's come up with a solution. And then you say, and now we arrive at our destination. And that's a travel montage. And you could do exploration montages. You're in a giant dungeon with so many rooms, we don't have time to discuss them all. But you've found all sorts of horrible problems getting through this dungeon. What did you do? And so then you do a montage, and people go around and they say, you know, we came to a cliff. There was, you know, we had to get across this chasm inside the dungeon. And the next player says, aha, you know, and that way everybody's part of the world building. And if somebody comes up with something cool as a game master, what you do is you go, oh, I'm going to save this for later. I'm going to put this location back in or something just like it. So just kind of an echo of their montage so they can tell they have affected the world with their world building.
That's awesome.
You'll find those in every. There's been a whole bunch of adventures for Organized Play 13th Age. I don't know how many. Each session has a montage. And so I stole that. I put it in The Sun Below, both adventures, The City on the Edge, and Sleeping Lady. And I do it in my Numenera games. Of course, I do it in my 13th Age games. But it's a great thing, and I stole it.
Now, I got to ask the question that I know my players are going to ask the first time I do this. Do we get any XP for all those things that we defeated on during the montage?
Absolutely not. What kind of fool question is that? No, you do get to flex your muscles and look cool, though.
Right, right.
I will have to say, I don't play right now in a game where I track XP.
Okay.
In 13th Age, they basically go up a level every 3 or 4 games, depending on my whim.
Okay.
And between every game, they get an incremental advance. Numenera, I try to give out about 3 to 5 experience points per game.
Okay.
And I guess the players are tracking their own experience points in Numenera. But I don't... the idea of experience points is like something to like fret over and worry about and like lose the fun part of the game. No, the montage is all about, you know, having fun. And it's just a little 5-minute thing. And also, it, usually it's at the beginning of a session. And so it kind of gets everybody's creative juices rolling.
Cool. Well, I just had to ask because I know that any GMs out there, you try a montage.
Yeah.
Some player is going to ask you. And I guess the way I would explain it is I'd say, well, there's really no risk, right? Because we're not rolling dice. I'm letting you just succeed.
Exactly. But I.
So why should you get XP for that?
Right. Oh, you shouldn't. And if you ask, you should be killed.
Yeah.
I mean, in a nice way.
That's really cool. I just started a new campaign for D&D in this new world I'm building. And I was planning a pretty lengthy trip. And I want to, you know, run some of it in the conventional way and have some actual encounters and stuff. But I don't want to do the whole thing because, for one, it would take forever. And for two, they'd be like, you know, 20th level by the time they got wherever they were going.
I know, right? If they were getting experience points for all that.
Yeah. So the montage is a great way to kind of solve that.
Yeah. And I have a blog about it. I can send you the link.
Yes, please do. I'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah.
Somehow I miss that one. I usually read your blog articles. I don't remember reading that one.
It was a while ago.
Okay.
Yeah, that was one of the many things I've stolen from Ash Law, who's a really good game adventure designer.
So while you're doing the montage, do you have a catchy song that you're looping, you know, in the background?
Well, you could. I have...
I need a hero.
That would be really good, actually. And the answer is actually yes.
Awesome.
Because
awesome.
I have when I play at home and when at the friendly local game store, I really can't do this. But on my stereo, I've got the 13th Age soundtrack, and
nice.
And then I have other music for when I'm playing Numenera at home. And so it's not a loop. Yeah. I've got stuff going constantly. Used to try to like, oh, during this segment, I'm going to switch to this song, but I couldn't keep up with that, you know. So I just found really cool gaming music, and I just put it on shuffle, and away it goes.
Nice. Yeah, I have a Numenera channel on Pandora.
Yeah.
And I primarily run online, so I can't like listen to it while I'm running. Well, I guess I could, but I don't.
Right.
But I do listen to it while I'm doing my adventures and... And I use it for D&D now, too.
Oh, cool.
It works.
Yeah.
The same station works for both. It's so weird.
Adventure gaming. I also have the soundtrack for... I've got some Trail of Cthulhu soundtracks.
Ooh.
That stuff is so scary that you only put it on, you definitely only put it on at certain times or for certain sessions. And I did throw in a lot of horror in Sleeping Lady. There's definitely an eldritch horror component to that adventure. We were talking, I think just chatting over the internet about fronts before.
Yes.
And one of my fronts is eldritch, is a total eldritch horror. You will be driven mad. Bad things will happen. And the other front is, you are here to save this mining town, and this front will destroy that mining town. Nice. So those two fronts are, I didn't exactly follow the Dungeon World front design philosophy. I got carried away, of course, as I always do. but I was inspired by that. I stole the fronts from Dungeon World, but I did a little different. But what a front is, for people who don't know, is that these are disasters in the making. And if your players just sit around on their butts and don't actually do anything, your characters, I guess your players might be doing the same. if the characters don't actually solve the problems, a disaster will happen. And the idea is you have multiple fronts, because when they're working to solve one disaster, the other one's getting worse. And then they go back, so they go over to that one, but then the first one starts getting worse.
Yeah, I love it.
That is an essential what a front is. You have basically two plot lines that the players are trying to juggle between. And I really point the players hard at the front that is not the super nasty one. So allowing the super nasty one to build up.
Some
players figure that out quick.
And another part of doing the fronts is, you as a GM, you know, like, front number one, this is what's going to happen if the players don't do anything about it.
Exactly.
And so, you know, it's like the world is changing around them, both based on what they're doing and also what they're neglecting.
Exactly. Exactly. So, yeah. And then I take care of what happens if they solve both fronts, or what happens if they only solve one front. So as a GM, you know that, you know, what the consequences will be. And it's certainly possible for them to feel like they've accomplished a lot and only solved one front.
Awesome.
But if they've solved two, they win a big prize.
I love giving players more to deal with than they can actually deal with. So they have to choose, you know.
Make a priority.
Yeah, it's like the whole, you know, Batman and Robin thing, you know. Do you save Robin or do you save the pretty lady? You only have time to save one. What do you do?
Sorry, Robin.
Yeah, Robin can save himself, right? Yeah. He's a superhero,
you
too.
Got a cape and a mask, damn it.
Come on, Robin.
Man up. We're always a kid. I really enjoy the whole concepts of front, because, like what you said, it gives the players too much. And I might do it again for the next one. I haven't decided on that. I haven't started work yet on Sleeping. I mean, the next one will be The Sun Below. That's How the Light Gets In.
And nice.
It'll be like okay. It. So I keep talking about The Sun Below. So what happens when that sun starts failing? So we'll have some fun with that.
Yeah, and why we're talking about that again, for Numenera fans out there, your new adventure has quite a few new monsters, new Numenera items. You've got some descriptors and a focus in there.
Yep.
All kinds of good stuff.
Yes, if you always wanted to be a blood-sucking slime plant.
I know I'd have.
Exactly. I mean, who has? Well, now you have the mechanics for that.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm a big fan of plant creatures.
Yeah, I don't know why, but I am too. I just love that.
That's one of the reasons I put two suns in my D&D world, so I have an excuse to have lots of plant creatures.
Oh, I see. There's all that energy coming from
the They get twice as much light.
Yeah, right. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
I guess I have two suns, but one just hangs out underground.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. One thing I'd like to mention, I also love handouts. So I added a bunch of handouts. You just print them out, cut them up, hand them to your players.
Awesome. I love handouts too. I love props of
any kind. Yeah, props. Yeah, exactly. Because I have a flashback scene where the players learn by actually participating in a flashback of NPCs. They become an NPC for one scene.
Oh, cool.
So there's this NPC that was an automaton, and if they repair him, he'll tell them a lot of important information. Uh-huh. But instead of you sitting there as the GM going, point number one, point number two, point number three, what you do is you let the players, you give them these little handouts, and they're not scripts, but they tell them, like, okay, here's what you need to get across. Here's your secret that you have to reveal, but pretend you're trying not to reveal. And here's what you do to harass another player to get them to reveal their secret. And so everybody, nobody's on the up and up. All these NPCs all have horrible secrets. And so you play out that scene, and when all the secrets are revealed, the Game Master brings it to a conclusion. But those are handouts, so you know you don't have to try to tell your players how to do that.
That's awesome. I love it. Well, it's getting time to wrap up episode 66 of Game Master's Journey. I want to thank John so much for coming on and talking with me today. Please be sure to visit the show notes at starwalkerstudios.com for this episode, episode 66 of Game Master's Journey, and I'll have lots of helpful links there for you if you'd like to learn more about John, if you'd like to learn more about Dread Unicorn Games. Check out John's blog, check out John's published adventures for Numenera, etc., etc., etc. All that information will be there, and please go check it out. If you would like to reach me, you can email me at gamemastersjourney@gmail.com. You can find me on Google+, just search for Lex Starwalker, and you can follow me on Twitter at Lex Starwalker. Again, the website starwalkerstudios.com/gamemastersjourney is where you can find the show notes for this and all the episodes. Lots of helpful information in there. In addition to everything else I mentioned, you can find the Patreon and donate buttons if you'd like to support the show and learn more about becoming a patron. Really appreciate the patrons. You also can find the iTunes and Stitcher buttons if you would like to subscribe or leave a review. Also, at the bottom of the show notes, you can sign up for the new Starwalker Studios newsletter. You will receive, at most, an email a month from me just about what's going on with the studio and the various podcasts. Right now, in addition to Game Master's Journey, I'm producing another weekly show, Expanse, the unofficial podcast. And just last night, I'm recording this on Monday, so last night, Sunday night, the 23rd of November, the premiere episode of The Expanse was released on Sci-Fi Channel's YouTube channel and various other places. It's on sci-fi.com as well if you want to watch it. Excellent show, and we're going to be talking about that in Expanse, the unofficial podcast, later this week, so definitely tune in for that. So I hope you have a chance to play your favorite RPG this week. I'll be back soon with another episode of Game Master's Journey and the conclusion of this interview with John Marvin. Until then, game on.
This has been a Starwalker Studios production, your source for quality gaming and hobby podcasts.
This episode's music provided by Cloudwalker, Renfield, Transboy, and Ish. Please see the show notes for more details at starwalkerstudios.com/gamemastersjourney.